With everything that's going on, it really does seem that the apocalypse is upon us. And the four horsemen of the apocalypse should be making their way here pretty soon. Now, I'm going to be looking at some clips from a video by Greg Laurie. Now, he's a well-known preacher from California, and I'm a big fan of his, having watched a lot of his sermons online. Now, right at the start of the sermon I'm going to be looking at, which is on the four horsemen of the apocalypse, part of his series on Revelation, he refers to a book by Billy Graham, written just a few years ago, when he talks about the four horsemen of the apocalypse, and he points to when we can expect them to arrive. Take a listen.
Years ago, Billy Graham wrote a book called Approaching Hoofbeats, The Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. And in the introduction of that book, Billy wrote, and I quote, "Some theologians and Bible scholars have thought these scenes as described by the Apostle John are a description of past events. However, most evangelical scholars interpret them as having to do with the future, as do I. In my view, the shadows of all four horsemen can already be seen galloping through the world at this moment. Therefore, I want not only to apply these four symbols of events yet to come, but also to put our ears lower to the ground and hear their hoofbeats growing louder by the day." Billy concludes, "I can hear the hoofbeats of these horses much louder than when I first began writing this book."
Well, Greg Laurie goes on to detail lots of things happening in the news that seem to confirm this. But is it true that this chapter is talking about things that are going to happen now? Well, I'll come back to that in a minute, so keep listening. But first, I've got another short clip, because I want to look today particularly at the first of the four horsemen of the apocalypse. The first horseman, Greg Laurie believes, he has identified as being someone very specific. I mean, he talks about the others as well, but the identity of the first one is fascinating and interesting and ties in with the timeline thing I was talking about. When is the apocalypse due? When do the four horsemen of the apocalypse make an appearance? Identifying the first of them as he does fits in with something else in the Bible, some specific person in the Bible who he identifies as being the first of these four horsemen. So listen to this. This is Greg Laurie on the first horseman of the apocalypse, and he starts off with an amusing allusion to the Lone Ranger.
The rider on a white horse. Who is this masked man? Now, normally when we see a guy on a white horse, we expect him to have a white hat. That's because we've seen a lot of Westerns, right? And the guy on the white horse with the white hat, is he the good guy or the bad guy? He's the good guy. Because the bad guy, he rides a black horse and has a black hat, right? Well, in this particular case, the rider on the white horse is not a good guy at all. In fact, he's a super bad guy. He's the baddest of all guys. The rider of the white horse is none other than the Antichrist.
Who is the Antichrist? Who is this person that we're talking about? Well, it only occurs, the Antichrist is a person who only occurs in the letters from the Apostle John. And he writes about someone who is already there, already on the scene. So is that a problem? I mean, are the events that are described in Revelation actually not in the 21st century, but in the first century? Well, we'll come back to that in a minute. Let's just park that. Let's first of all look at who is the Antichrist. I mean, if this first of the four riders is the Antichrist, then we should be able to see a similarity in the description. Let's look at who the Antichrist is. Now, 1 John chapter 2, verse 18. This is the first of four references, just four verses in the Bible which refer to the Antichrist. "Dear children, this is the last hour, and as you have heard, the Antichrist is coming, and even now many Antichrists have come. This is how we know it is the last hour. The Antichrist is coming now." Now is the first century when John is writing. John was a contemporary of Jesus. He was one of Jesus' apostles. He's writing this later, but not that much later. It's still in the first century. 1 John chapter 2, verse 22. "Who is the liar? It is whoever denies that Jesus is the Christ. Such a person is the Antichrist." So the Antichrist is someone who denies that Jesus is the Christ. Not necessarily a conquering figure, someone who has a spiritual disagreement, a disagreement of who Jesus is. So in a way, as Greg Laurie says later in his sermon, the Antichrist is someone who's not just against Christ, but is instead of Christ, in place of Christ. And that's how Greg Laurie justifies the idea that this person, the rider, the horseman of the apocalypse, in being the Antichrist, is instead of Christ because, well, he's replacing Christ as a conqueror. You see how that could fit in. But it doesn't say that here. The Bible doesn't say anything about him being a conqueror. Next verse. 1 John chapter 4, verse 3. But every spirit that does not acknowledge Jesus is not from God. This is the spirit of the Antichrist. So any spirit that doesn't acknowledge that Jesus is from God is the spirit of the Antichrist. It's a spiritual matter. And we then note at the end of this verse that this spirit you've heard is coming and even now is already in the world, was already there then in the first century. And then finally, the final verse that talks about the Antichrist, 2 John verse 7. There's only one chapter in 2 John. Verse 7. I say this because many deceivers who do not acknowledge Jesus Christ are coming in the flesh, have gone out into the world. Any such person is the deceiver and the Antichrist. So it's anyone going out into the world to deceive people, saying Jesus Christ is not the Son of God, and also that he's not the Christ, and also that he is the one sent from God, and he's also not coming in the flesh. So they don't acknowledge Jesus coming physically. They may acknowledge some sort of spiritual presence. These people are not the Christ. They're not Christians, they're not little Christs. They are the Antichrist, against Christ. That doesn't even seem close to the picture that we read in Revelation chapter 6 of this rider on a white horse. Next, let me show you that the prophecies in Revelation were entirely intended for the first century. Later than when the book was written, prophecies about events in the future for the writer of the book, but in the past for us, Revelation, was written before the temple was destroyed. That's important. And it shows that it was before 70 AD when it was actually razed to the ground, when the Roman armies surrounded Jerusalem, put it to siege. It was a horrific time of violence within as the different Jewish factions turned on each other, and of famine and of disease. It was a terrible time. And eventually the temple was destroyed. The Roman armies came in and destroyed everything, put people to the sword. And there was an end to Jerusalem and the temple and that way of worshipping. It happened in 70 AD, and Revelation was written before that at some point. Right at the start of Revelation, we read this. We read that the book of Revelation was written about something that would shortly take place. Remember, it's in the first century. The revelation from Jesus Christ, which God gave him to show his servants what must soon take place. He made it known by sending his angel to his servant John. It must soon take place. Revelation chapter 1, verse 3. Blessed is the one who reads aloud the words of this prophecy, and blessed are those who hear it, and take to heart what is written in it, because the time is near. The time is near. And taking just those two verses, we can see that it must have been in the first century, later in the first century than it was written, so in the future for the author, but way in the past for us. And just in case you're thinking maybe, well, that just refers to the first bit of Revelation. Nope, if we go to the last chapter, we find this, Revelation 22, verse 6. The angel said to me, "These words are trustworthy and true. The Lord, the God who inspires the prophets, sent his angel to show his servants the things that must soon take place." All this was to happen before the end of the first century, certainly soon after the people, the person writing down this revelation had written it down. This was a prophecy of something that would happen soon, very soon. And if it didn't, it would mean it was a false prophecy. So there's no point taking it seriously. It did happen. Let me take you through how I know that this did happen. First of all, let's read, not Revelation 6, where we are going to find out about this rider of the apocalypse. But first, let's go back to Revelation chapter 5. Because in Revelation chapter 5, we find something interesting about the person who is sending these horsemen, the person who opens the scroll, the Lamb. The Lamb who was slain opens the throne, an obvious reference to Jesus. This is Revelation chapter 5, verse 9. And they sang a new song, saying, "You are worthy to take the scroll and to open its seals, because you were slain. With your blood you purchased for God persons from every tribe and language and people and nation." Look, Jesus, then, is opening the seal. He's the one who's behind releasing the four horsemen of the apocalypse. They are sent, it seems, in judgment. And we saw a judgment come upon Jerusalem because it was destroyed. The temple was destroyed. And Jesus came to replace the temple. He referred to his own body as the temple. The worship that comes to God used to be done in the temple. Now it comes through trust in Jesus Christ. And we see, going forward to Revelation chapter 6, that these seals from the scroll that the Lamb opens releases the horseman of the apocalypse. He's the first one. This is Revelation chapter 6, beginning to read at verse 1. "I watched as the Lamb opened the first of the seven seals. Then I heard one of the four living creatures say in a voice like thunder, 'Come.' I looked, and there before me was a white horse. Its rider held a bow, and he was given a crown, and he rode out as a conqueror bent on conquest." So this rider, this horseman, has come on conquest. He has a bow. Now, bows and arrows were famous at the time because of the Parthians being great at fighting with a bow and arrow and winning very famous victories because they were so good with them. So that would have been in their minds. A conqueror coming, you would, in your mind, have the Roman armies as the great conquerors. But they would have known that anyway at the time, because it was the Romans who held sway in the area. And they were going to come to Jerusalem and destroy it. Jesus predicted it, but we'll come to that in a minute. Look, that he was a conqueror bent on conquest, and he had a crown. Well, is this first rider, is this first horde meant to, first horseman meant to be the emperor, or is he meant to be one of the generals? Or, well, I have a different view of him. I'll come to that in a minute. Let's first of all justify the fact that this is about the destruction of Jerusalem, ending worship in the temple, and being part of the turning to worship through Christ. Now, that was already happening, of course, but with the destruction of the temple, the old ways had gone and the new had come. Verse 12, "I watched as he opened the sixth seal." Remember, this is the Lamb. This is Jesus opening this seal. "There was a great earthquake, and the sun turned black like sackcloth made out of goat hair. The whole moon turned blood red." This is what is used to describe a great change in authority, when a government falls. Or in this case, when not only a government falls, but a whole covenant falls and the temple is destroyed. Mark chapter 13, verse 1. Now follow along with this and see how Revelation fits in with what Jesus says about what will happen in the end times when the temple is destroyed in the first century. "As Jesus was leaving the temple, one of his disciples said to him, 'Look, teacher, what massive stones, what magnificent buildings.' And in verse 2, Jesus says, 'Do you see all these great buildings? Not one stone here will be left on another. Everyone will be thrown down.'" So as he talks about this destruction of Jerusalem, it's interesting to see that the disciples ask the question that we've been asking. When will these things happen? And what will be the sign that they're about to be fulfilled? And he talks about people coming in his name, and he talks about all the violence and an earthquake, or rather several earthquakes that will happen, which did happen at the time. This was not a peaceful time in history. Verse 14, "When you see the abomination that causes desolation standing where it does not belong, let the reader understand." That is a reference, a clear reference, both back to prophecies in the Old Testament, but also to when these prophecies came to fulfillment, when the abomination of a Roman general standing in the Holy of Holies in the temple had happened years earlier. They would have understood, the reader would have understood, that this meant that when the Romans came in and took over the temple, then it would be the time to run. Or when they were arriving to take over the temple, you've got to run then. Don't hang around, get out. In fact, he says this, that those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Now, Jesus, talking about these matters, says this. This is Luke chapter 13. He talks about destruction of property and about whether it happens to those who are sinners. This is Luke chapter 13, verse 2. Do you think these Galileans were worse sinners than all other Galileans because they suffered? I tell you, no. But unless you repent, you too will perish. And then he says this. Or those 18 who died when the tower in Siloam fell on them, do you think they were more guilty than all the others living in Jerusalem? I tell you, no. But unless you repent, you too will perish. So it's not about whether you're a sinner or not. It's whether you repent or not. No one is exempt from judgment. And also, no one is exempt from being saved. All they do have to do is repent and follow Jesus. In this case, Jesus' instruction to run. It's clear that it's talking about armies surrounding Jerusalem when it's talking about this destruction of the temple and when it talks about the abomination of desolation coming. But let's turn to later in this chapter, in Mark chapter 13, to read these verses that tie in exactly. In those days following that distress, the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, and the stars will fall from the sky, and the heavenly bodies will be shaken. This is just after the four horsemen of the apocalypse have done their work. Let's go back then to Revelation chapter 6. Revelation chapter 6, verse 12. I watched as he opened the sixth seal. There was a great earthquake. The sun turned black like sackcloth made out of goat hair. The whole moon turned blood red, and the stars in the sky fell to earth. Doesn't that sound like the same imagery? And it's used in the Old Testament to talk about when there's a change of government, when armies come in and take over and everything changes around. In other words, it's not literal, it's figurative, but talking about something very real that would happen, that there would be a change in the way things were run. And that's what was happening with the four horsemen of the apocalypse. So who is this first horseman? Who is this rider of the white horse who holds a bow and he's given a crown? He's given a crown to take over authority of the place. He has a bow, so he comes in power. I believe that all four of these riders represent the same thing. Jesus came in power in that moment. This was when everything changed. It was a big moment in the history of God's dealing with humanity. The temple was destroyed, but all who trusted in Jesus were saved.